You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
War, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
The Defector Review, Take 2.
So where was I before I was so rudely interrupted?
Nope, let's just start the whole dang thing over again. I didn't save any of that.
Okay. You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a Next Generation podcast, where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. Tonight's episode is The Defector. I'm Paul from England, and with me is...
I'm James from London, in England.
And I'm Lou from Nebraska, in England. You guys didn't know that, huh?
Is that like Springfield? There's one in every country.
Yeah, that's true. Yes, we have one in Kansas, one in Missouri. I don't know. But anyway, but I'm not from England. I'm sorry. The Queen probably has a warrant out for my arrest or something. After what we did to her on the Lou Trek Show, I would not seriously doubt it. But... And wasn't it, though? But, I mean, you know, it was optimistic that she'd still be alive in the 24th century. It's just the number of times that she, you know, flatlined and died. It was just sad.
Actually, Paul, perhaps this is a good time to remind Lou that our queen has just become the longest reigning queen in history.
This is true. 63 years, yes, longer than Queen Victoria.
Wow.
But, I mean, Lou could be onto something here, though. I mean, she might have died a few years ago, and they just keep bringing out this mannequin every now and again that waves its arm.
Have you guys ever... Okay, stupid. Have you ever practiced the Queen wave?
It's obligatory over here.
Really?
It's the first year of school. They teach you how to do it.
Really? Okay. I mean, it just seems like, to me, she doesn't really wave. She just has partial Parkinson's disease, and it just kind of, it does it itself.
I think she just has a mechanical arm at the side of her, and it just automatically starts waving.
Mm. So, 63 years, she's had plenty of practice there.
She'll be getting a repetitive strain injury.
Yeah, really. Carpal tunnel. She'd have to switch arms. Try the other hand. I can do it. Go back. All right. So, Paul, as I said earlier at the beginning of this episode, this is the Defector Review Take 2. We tried this last week, and it was absolutely terrible. As you guys heard for the Vengeance Factor, there at the end, the quality started to really go down, but by the time we were saying goodbye, our Skype connection had already kicked out. I mean, it was going bad. But I had to leave it in. There was nothing we could do. And as we went on to the Defector, well, it just got a whole lot worse. And so we had to postpone. So we're going to do this again. Paul, tell us a little bit about yourself. And we know you are also a member of the Trekmate family. So where can you be found?
Yes, I am. For those people who may be new or haven't heard of me before, I come from the Liverpool area of the UK. And basically, I am on the Trekmate website in two different podcasts. One is the Ten Forward podcast, where we just talk about anything to do with Star Trek. And the other one is the Sci-Fi Waffle podcast, which is a relatively new addition to the Trekmate website, where we just basically waffle on about anything to do with science fiction in general, and every now and again a little bit of science thrown in.
You know what's funny about science fiction? I really don't get into sci-fi all that much. I know it sounds strange. But beyond Star Trek, I can't really tell you what goes on in sci-fi. I haven't seen a BSG. Is that right? Battlestar Galactica. BSG. The only Doctor Who I know is the one with Tom Baker. And his little companion was a mechanical canine. I believe it was his name.
That's right.
Okay. But I have not seen any of the others. Liverpool. Are you old enough to... Isn't John Lennon from Liverpool?
That is correct. All of the Beatles are from Liverpool. It's about the only thing that Liverpool is famous for at the moment.
Mm. You know, John Lennon, I tell you, I don't know, whatever you think about his political views, I happen to think he was probably one of the best artists ever. I mean, ever. Some of his music was just absolute, can't be beat even today.
This is true, and I think him and McCartney wrote some of the best and longest-lasting songs of all time.
Right.
John Lennon was obviously Liverpool's favourite son, and they've named the local airport after him, the John Lennon Airport.
Nice. Although I can't help but wonder what his music, how could it have evolved, you know, as we got farther and farther from Vietnam. But I would have loved to at least had the man have a chance to give us some more, because it's a sore miss.
The synopsis for tonight's show is: the Enterprise grants asylum to a defector from the Romulan Empire who claims to have vital information concerning a renewed Romulan offensive against the Federation. This is the 10th episode of Season 3 of Star Trek The Next Generation. The original release date is the 1st of January 1990. And it's written by Ronald D. Moore and directed by Robert Shearer. Guest stars include James Sloyan as Admiral Jarek, Andreas Katsoulas as Tomalak, John Hancock as Hayden, and the co-star is S.A. Templeman as Bates. So guys, what did you think about this particular episode then?
I don't know, what do you think first?
I think it's an excellent episode, and originally when I asked to come on the Battle Bridge, you gave me a list of episodes, and you said, and I said, oh, the only one I could make at the time was the Defector. And you said, yes, that's available, and I'm surprised that nobody else has actually picked it.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree. I couldn't believe that nobody had picked this one to come on. It is one of the best of any episode up to this point, I think. There's a couple of exceptions, obviously, but I think this is really one of the better ones. I won't spoil it by saying my rating for it just yet, but yeah, I was really pleased that I got to talk about this one tonight.
Mm. James?
Yeah, maybe I should also, you know, I don't want to spoil any kind of, you know, any score ahead of the time, but this episode is perfect. I honestly think it's a really great episode, and I think it's a kind of like a quantum leap above stuff that we've seen so far, even the good stuff that we've seen so far. I think it's so well written, and I really enjoy it, and I think that I've heard it described as a bit of like a hidden gem of season three, and I just don't quite understand why. I think it stands up along with the other great episodes in season three in my mind, and yeah, it's just, you know, it's just all round great.
Hmm.
Lou, let us hear your reasons why it sucks.
It just totally sucks. I mean, if I could give it a 0.5, I would. You know, he lies to us from the start. I just hate this episode. God. Matter of fact, you know, why don't you guys just talk? I'm out of here. Crap. Aha! See? You stole my thunder, and I wasn't going to let you get away with that. This is a 5. This is what my notes say. It's a 5. I'm not going to make anyone wait till the end for this. It's a 5. I'm just going to justify my reasons why. And as I went back and I looked at Season 1 and Season 2, in Season 1, my highest number was a 4.5 for Conspiracy. James, your highest number was a 5 for Conspiracy.
2 fives.
Yeah, 2 fives.
And also where no one has gone before.
Yes, that's right. And yeah, Mark and Paul were on for that one. Mark's was 4, Paul's was 5. That's irrelevant. Season 2, I had 5 for The Measure of a Man. So did you. Data Logan gave it a 4. So this is going to be my second 5 for the series, the entire series. As crazy as that sounds with 50 episodes, and I only give 2 5s now. The music in this, I think, is superb. And at some point in my notes, I'm actually going to start the music, and I'm just going to let the intro from the point where the captain does... Well, I mean, when they get interrupted in the holodeck, and they stop in the corridor, from that point on, when they go to the bridge, they starts up that music, and I'm going to let it play through the show. I hope nobody minds it, but I just think it's awesome. The acting was superb. The Romulan, perfect. I kind of may like him a little more in Tomalak, too. But I wish we could have had more Tomalak as well. But this one here was an missed opportunity for... I mean, I would love to keep him on the ship. Jirok. So...
Spoilers.
Yeah.
Spoilers.
Yeah. Well, like I always say, if they don't know that he came on as a Seetaw and then gave his real identity as Jirok, I could be totally stunned. Leave it in the forum and we'll never spoil anything again. So, okay. So, Data and Picard, and hopefully you guys had a chance to research this or think about this some more. Data and Picard are on the holodeck where Data is playing out Henry V. Act 4, Scene 1, page 5. And, you know, and I looked it up, and but I noticed they don't do the whole play. And what I meant is Brother John Bates, you know, is that not the morning which cracks yonder? But at some point between there and, you know, who goes there? There's a lot of dialogue that's completely just been taken out of the real play. And the only reason I could think of, obviously, is brevity. You only have 3 minutes to set this whole thing up, and they can't do everybody's script. Does that make sense?
Yes, I think so, Lou. I think they needed to get to the point quickly. They, you know, otherwise it would have been a Shakespeare play, and they would have been going on for 5 or 10 minutes to get to the point, and I think it would have dragged, and people would have just got bored with it and you know, turned off the episode. So I think they had to give it an abridged version just to really sort of set the episode up as to what the whole episode was about.
Okay. And so what do you guys, as Englishmen, what do you think of Stewart's portrayal of, Michael Williams or Alexander Court or even both? I mean, what do you think of Stewart as a Shakespearean?
I think he does. It doesn't really show his Shakespearean acting off. In a great way. He's performed Shakespeare many times and done it fabulously. This, however, is a small bit part that he's given himself, and the accent is okay, I suppose. It's supposed to be a Midlands accent, you know, sort of a Stratford-upon-Avon, Birmingham accent. I've seen better performances of Shakespeare from him, but then again, he wasn't in the lead role, shall we say.
James?
No, I mean, I think that this is, you know, I think in my mind this is all good. I'm actually always interested in the opening scene, as because it doesn't, in my mind, it doesn't quite fit the episode, and I was just wondering from a kind of like a production standpoint whether or not it was something that was added later or it was something that had been sitting there that they wanted to do, because by this point, so this was written by, you know, Ron D. Moore. And I obviously know that these scripts undergo like rewrites, and you know they get handled by a larger group than just the guy that ends up on the credits. But to me, I think it seems strange that he would have come in with this kind of fully formed. Let's start with Shakespeare, and then let's go into this you know, big mystery about the Roman defector. So I've always wondered whether or not the first part was actually deemed for another episode.
Hmm. That's interesting, because to me, obviously, it ties in well with the discussion he has with Data. You know, why he can't just go walk among his troops.
Yes, I thought that.
Sure.
As well.
No, sure. I think that is true. However, I think there have been other instances where Picard has felt kind of like, distant from the crew because of, you know, whatever the mission has to be, whatever he has to have. You know, he has responsibilities on his shoulders, or he's got secrets that he can't share. So I think in that sense, it's a little bit generic in the parallels it's drawing. And I think that, you know, the way that Picard behaves in like things like Best of Both Worlds, I think that you can see that there's a larger distance between him and the crew. Whereas this one, I never quite felt that the distance was there given the story. So that's why I was at the back of my mind and thinking, well, you know, where did this particular start come from? And also, given that it's Ron D. Moore, I just don't think he would have come in with this from the beginning, because he's not as familiar with the crew. And this is, I think, only his second script. So, you know, at the back of my mind, I was just wondering. But I'm, you know, I'm very happy with how it all works, and it kind of makes a memorable start. Not just the holodeck, but, you know, the rest of the teaser is very, very strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it struck me as odd why Picard would be asking how was this, you know, a crew spirit. I would think Picard could be completely on top of that. Okay.
And in a way, Data wouldn't be, right?
Yeah, right. So, Data, I mean, everybody talks to Data, you know. I'm concerned, Data, but, you know, optimistic. Okay.
I mean, here's the greatest thing about, one of the greatest things. I love the fact that the holodeck characters go after Picard and they pretend, well, they head towards him to threaten him as he, like, announces himself. In my mind, that's exactly how I want the holodeck to behave.
Really? Because I have two pet peeves on that. One is, why didn't they stand him? Why didn't they see him standing there to begin with? And the other is, when you call for freeze program and the fire crackles on, I don't know.
Yeah, that always happens.
Okay, no. So this isn't the issue. This isn't the problem. As anyone that knows how I've kind of set my stall out on the holodeck in the past, and the holodeck is basically just a big, you know, it's a big computer game system. It's the, you know, the PlayStation or the Xbox of the 24th century. Mm-hmm. As a result, people know that when you press pause, you pause the action, but you do not necessarily pause all animation. Mm-hmm. And that's what's happening with the fire. The fire still crackles, but the action has been paused, not necessarily all animation. So that's the first get out of jail James apologist for this week.
that could be interesting if you've got a bomb in your hand with a fuse that's lit and going, and you say freeze program, and everybody stops, but the bomb keeps going.
Yeah, but it could just go, you know, in perpetuity. There's, you know, I think there's a difference between, you know, animation and action. So that's, in my mind, that's fine.
I hate arguing against a scientist.
You heard it here first.
And the issue about them attacking Picard, or at least, you know, reacting to Picard, I think that, again, if you play any computer games, you know that the background characters, you know, the background characters kind of sit there in their own little bubble until you get close enough to them, and then you like trigger like a warning, and they go, "Ooh, who's come nearby? I'm gonna have to go and attack him." So I'm happy with the holodeck, and I think that it behaves pretty much like a computer game in this episode. So, okay. Apologists, corner over.
Okay. Well, anyway, either way, you know, we have to stop this program because Riker interrupts to say, "An unidentified craft is entering the neutral zone, heading for Federation territory." And I guess I have to correct myself, because I said in a couple episodes ago, I gave praise that in a couple episodes, they'd have the sensors worked out by now, but apparently it's still unidentified. But by the time we get to the bridge, wasn't it Outpost Sierra? Something like that? That confirmed it was a Romulan...
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I'm trying to think. Romulan scout ship.
Scout ship.
What would a scout ship be doing this close to the neutral zone? Anyway... This is where I think the music is great. And guys, I'm going to go ahead and start it right now. So I hope that you don't mind. It's not going to be running for us because obviously I can't, I put it in post, but hopefully you can you guys deal with the... It's going to be very soft and subtle. It won't be very loud. So let's do that. Okay. So as I said, Picard rolls up to the bridge. Outpost Sierra 6 confirms our readings. The Romulan scout ship. And after a discussion why it'd be there, Picard opens a channel. But the Romulan's already asking for help because he wants asylum and is being pursued by a Romulan warbird. Did you guys get any indication, because obviously we know this whole thing is a setup. Two things. Did you guys at all the first time around realize that this may be some kind of setup? And do you think Jarak was actually sent by Tomalak for this whole thing? Or do you think everything that Jarak says is legitimate? Let's start with, did you have any idea that this could be false or a setup?
I didn't see that the first time round. I remember this the first time I watched it, and at the time I took it for what it was. It was obviously a guy running away from his own people, and the battle sequences seemed to indicate that he was being attacked. And when he beamed aboard, he was obviously wounded. So at that point, I didn't see anything wrong with it. It was probably later on that I became a little bit doubtful as to which way he was going to go, whether he was actually sent there or whether he what he was saying was true. But they seemed to play it very, very quickly, very early on in the episode. They seemed to start playing it both sides and saying, well, is he really here, as he says he is, or is he a spy or what? So instantly you were on the back foot trying to work out what was going on, whether he was genuine or not. Mm-hmm. Which was a bit of a surprise. They normally like to keep it to the end and then surprise you with the fact. But at the time, I just took it as it was at face value. Watching it this time round, of course, I knew the entire plot, and I think it was still just as confusing as to where you thought he would actually where his loyalties lied. So it's a bit of a strange one, I think. It's not your usual wait till the end to find out what's going on. It all sort of throws up all these questions very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, James?
No, and by the way, I have to say that I also think that it's very well done in terms of how they portray this. First time round, I completely bought into his story. And I think the reason why, upon subsequent views, you don't get annoyed that it's slightly unlikely that he would have escaped the warbird and he's a scout ship in the middle of nowhere. The reason why I think you can watch it and not be upset about that is because the people that are challenging him are, is Riker and is Worf and so on, and they think he's a spy. And I think even Data mentions that it's likely that he's a spy. And the crew are immediately on the, they believe that they are very suspicious of the dude. Now, had the story been that he had come aboard and he was welcome, and there was a certain naivety on the crew's behalf, you would probably think, oh, come off it, why didn't you see it? I was naive when I first saw it, but now I'm... But it's clear that these professionals shouldn't be acting in that manner. But I think that because the crew are suspicious themselves, I think that it allows you to, almost it gives you... It allows you to almost feel happy that you were tricked, but they weren't tricked, but perhaps they were in the end, and they all have these big double bluffs as you go on for the rest of the show. So I think it works very, very well.
Okay. And do you buy Jarak's story from start to begin, start to end, where he really believes there's this Romulan base, or do you think maybe he's actually working with Tomalak to lure the Enterprise into the neutral zone? And for all we know, go ahead.
I completely buy him. I completely buy him as an honest guy that attempted to come across because he was worried about society. So I do see him as a legitimate defector.
Okay, Paul.
Yeah, he seemed very animated about trying to get this war stopped, or potential war stopped before it started. So, and he was purely focused on that, and they were trying to ask him questions about other things, and he was saying, no, look, let's just get this war stopped. You've got to act now. It's imperative. And it wasn't just him trying to be devious and sly by suggesting they should go there. He was really adamant that this should happen now, and he'd risked so much to get there and to try and give the people this information and stop this war. So, yes, I think he was believable at that point.
Okay. What about if it was Centurion Horlach that came aboard and was going to tell us, and he kept urging us, you need to get into the neutral zone. You need to get into the neutral zone. You need to go there. We need to just go there. To me, it just seemed like he was too pushy, too fast, and you could tell he was hiding something. Even Deanna could tell he was hiding something. It just seemed like maybe he could possibly had been someone that Tom Locke would have sent you. This is a one-way mission. You're doing this for the Romulan Empire. His wife and daughter. Maybe he has a wife and daughter. Maybe he doesn't really have a wife and daughter. I mean, it took three communications from Starfleet Admiral, and only the last one was, Captain, we have confirmed. Other than that, Romulans weren't telling him who he was. Couldn't they have known that from the beginning? So it just seemed like there was a lot of misdirection. And at the beginning, I thought CETOL was full of crap.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, he was still saying that, you know, he was just some sort of lowly clerk, and he'd seen all of these communiques going past him and all this type of thing. So it was a little bit more believable in that respect, that he was somebody maybe who was a little desperate to try and, you know, get his point across. And also the reason why the Romulans hadn't really sort of gone, tried to kill him outright. They'd sort of let him go, which is the impression I got. They'd let him go very easily. When it was sort of revealed that he was a little bit higher up in the pecking order, that became a little bit more interesting as to whether he now is he telling the truth, because now he is more in a position to be an actual spy. So but at that point I thought it was he was okay.
I agree. So what do you guys think if he had just come straight out and said, I'm Admiral Aladar Zirok, and I've come with an important message? I mean, don't you think Picard would have taken him a lot more seriously then, had he, instead of coming aboard and being some low logistics officer?
No, because I would expect of him to have actually been killed by the Romulans. If we thought for one minute that he was an admiral, then why was he allowed to escape so easily? And that then becomes a totally different kettle of fish. I think you're looking at more at somebody who has been planted there rather than been allowed to escape, than has managed to escape, I should say. And I think that the Romulans probably would have shot him from under Picard's nose if it had been a real admiral who had escaped to give this information. He would have had so much information that he could give. They would have killed him outright if they weren't planting him.
You know, that makes sense. That way, if he could be CETAR, he could only give what information about the base. But he wouldn't have any information about anything else. What would be the point of interrogating him? James?
So actually, I have to say that I really like the Jarek character. I think he's an exceptionally well-written guy and very deep. And I buy the idea that he came across and he kind of wanted to. And I think there's a bit of an exchange between him and Picard later, where Picard tells him that he can't kind of dance on the edge of the neutral zone. And I honestly think that he came with the impression that he would be able to do that. He would be able to kind of give enough information to stop the war, but not necessarily betray his people. And I really did buy into his kind of his philosophy. I thought that, you know, he was written as a good man that just found himself in a position that was untenable, and he was forced to make this choice, and he was uncomfortable about, you know, being the traitor. And I think that really made this guy a really, you know, in my mind, I think he was a very three-dimensional character, and you could see that he was very upset about betraying his his home world, and he was also very upset about the the issue with his children and the family that he left behind. And I really think, I thought that the idea of him coming over, pretending to be someone else, okay, it might be a little bit naive, but this guy is an idealist, and I thought that he was coming over believing he would be able to, he would be able to send this information to Starfleet, they would eat it up, and then eventually he would probably be able to, be smuggled back into Romulus, or the Romulan Empire, as a, on the grounds that he's just a lowly clerk, or a sub-lieutenant, whoever it happened to be. I think that he believed that he was able to do that. And I didn't. I think what happens throughout this episode is that, and you can see it. You can see the situation getting more and more out of his control, and him getting very frustrated that he's not able to get people to do what he wants. So he can't get the Enterprise to, break across and break across the neutral zone and be brash in their actions. And to a certain extent, maybe maybe because the Enterprise is not behaving like a Romulan ship would behave, and being less gung-ho, I think that's really what frustrates him and what eventually brings him out and requires him to make his full declaration at the end. Okay. But I really enjoyed the character. I thought that he was exceptionally well written, considering that we're talking about a guy that is in this one episode and that's it, and the exchanges he has, in particular when he's in Sig Bay and he's winding up Worf, and he then talks to Riker about it, and everything he says about Worf is absolutely true, if you believe that he is this kind of a, pacifist isn't the right word, but this guy that's, concerned about the militarization and concerned about, the way that his planet is going. And I really think, I generally just buy into him as he is portrayed in this episode. Perhaps I'm naive.
Okay. Well, I mean, obviously, he definitely was legitimate, because in the end, when Tom Locke shows up, I mean, Jarek doesn't say, "Hey, Sam, here they are. I brought them to you. Beam me over before I end up here forever." So, I mean, he obviously left with the Enterprise. He knew who his next mission was, and that was to kill himself. But anyway, okay. So this is our first example of how a game of chess with the Romulan goes, huh? So, I mean, yeah, I thought it was very interesting that the Romulan warbird just turned around. I mean, my jaw was open just like Picard's, The time he's telling him, you either leave or we're going to have to... What? No argument?
Yeah, that's something I thought was a little strange. It was the Romulans turned away from a fight. That was the first sort of thing. The alarm bells were starting to, to get ready to ring at that point, I think.
Okay. So the humiliating defeat at the Battle of the Shiraw has not been forgotten. Well, apparently it has, because I have no idea what they're talking about. So obviously it was an off-screen fight that the Federation and Romulans got into.
Yes, and it's not even mentioned in the books, I don't think. Not certainly in the... Well, maybe it has been. It's not something I've read anyway.
Mm. Okay. So the Romulans are building a base on Nelvana 3, and it just went past the Federation sensors. And in the next 48 hours, the reactor core will be online. And we can prevent this by destroying the base now. Do you guys think at all that while the Enterprise was just sitting there trying to absorb what was happening, that there were probably Romulan warbirds flying around them, both on the Federation side and at Nelvana 3?
I mean, no, I didn't get that impression. I mean, I don't... It's generally, you kind of believe what you kind of see. I don't buy that there's huge fleets of warbirds out there that are, that are hanging around and are able to go completely undetected, because you never see fleets, of course. You only see the odd ship here and there. So I always find the issue of the the Romulans kind of being there, or you not knowing if they're there. Much more of the, much more like when the Changeling threat comes into DS9, you know that they could probably have potentially lots of people all around you, but the reality of the situation is probably that there's only one person on Earth, and the kind of the fear that you get by having the potential is huge. So you don't even need to have all of these fleets. You just need to have the potential for one of them to almost do exactly the same kind of damage or have the same effect on your enemy. But I always get the impression that it's much more of a threat that people are concerned about rather than an actual threat.
Because I often wondered, once the sensors didn't show anything, they sent a probe, it doesn't show anything, nothing but barren rock. If Picard had just turned around and headed for the nearest starbase, something tells me a couple of Romulan warbirds would have just popped out of the nowhere. They're not taking that ship home with that guy.
Well, they do in the end, though, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, when they're at Nirvana 3, but what I'm saying is, before they get to that point, they're at the border approximate to Nirvana 3. They've sent a probe. The probe says there's absolutely nothing there. There are some ionization disturbances in the atmosphere, but beyond that, there's absolutely nothing on the planet. I mean, at that point, I think Picard should have just turned around and headed for the nearest starbase instead of running off to Nirvana 3. But obviously it would end the show, number one. But number two, had he done that, I think there's probably at least one or two Romulan warbirds that was flanking them at the time. And had they just turned around and left, that's when they would have probably came out of hiding. Yeah, no, maybe.
I'm not convinced personally myself. Okay. Because I always feel that the Romulans are trying to, I mean, it's like when Data's mentioning, that would not be an atypical response. They're trying to get you to make the moves. Mm-hmm. And as a result, I really do buy into this idea that the Romulans have set up this story. And then also the fact that there's a cloaked probe or whatever it happened to have been, it's almost as if it's like, breadcrumb trails that it's just asking you to come across. I think that their ultimate goal is not just to have the Enterprise destroyed, because there are ways you can go about that. The ultimate aim is always slightly more subtle than that. It's getting things destroyed and almost looking like the victims.
Oh,
and I think that kind of informs a lot of their kind of decisions.
Okay, Paul, thoughts so far?
I'm sort of the opinion that a Romulan warbird cloaked uses a lot of energy, and I'm not too sure how long they can stay cloaked. But also, they are detectable vaguely whilst cloaked. You have to look closely, but you can still detect them. So eventually, I think if you've got cloaked warbirds, then they will have to uncloak at some point. Otherwise, they're going to use up all of the power. So how far they could get into Federation space without being detected, I don't really know.
Hmm.
But it always worries me when people are saying, somebody is trying to convince somebody they should go across the neutral zone and do something about, and the only person that seems to be around is the Enterprise or Picard or whatever. And they seem very quick to jump across it. And it always worries me that, because you are opening yourself up to, you came across first, therefore we can now start a war. Politically, it's very, 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 very dangerous move. So yes, I think in some respects, you're right, they should have just turned heel and gone straight to the nearest starbase, and reported all of the facts that they had. Rather than jumping straight across it to see what was going on, it's very, very politically dangerous. I think it's a bad call by Picard to do that.
Yeah, especially when they have an admiral saying you need to consider everything that man's saying is an unreliable source. And so, he has a discussion with them. And do you have children, Captain Picard? You've given up too much for you. I mean, really, is that his daughter's smile? Is that the reason why Parkhard decided to just jump the neutral zone and head on to Nelvana 3? That's slim to me. It's slim. And having said that, this is still a perfect episode.
And don't forget, of course, this is the Enterprise, which has a large contingent of children and women who are basically just there along for the ride. What he should have done is separated the saucer and gone in with the battle bridge, effectively, mm-hmm. And the smaller part of the ship. Why risk all of those civilian lives just to find out whether if there was something, whether there was a base on that which could potentially lead to war? I think it's a bad call.
Mm-hmm. And can I disagree on this one? Because so you mentioned the Admiral, and in particular when you know that it's Admiral Jarak, and that he says, okay, you should treat everything he says as, you should treat him as unreliable. I think that what they're basically saying there is that almost that, you know, this guy is clearly not going to be a defector because he's the Admiral, he's worked all his career, he's going to not be that kind of guy. But what almost happens is that I think when Picard is able to convince himself that he is indeed a defector, it's kind of raising the stakes, you know, by a factor of 100 or so, because instead of just having some dude that might say something and has been, you know, has weak character and has just, you know, come across for whatever reason he's been withering, we've actually got here like a serious guy that's come across. And I think that in a way, I would always read it as the Admiral is probably saying, you know, look, 80% chance is that this guy is just lying, he's trying to play you because he's the Admiral, he's Admiral Jarak, and, you know, he's a military man. But I think on the other side, there's this 20% chance that he has actually walked across, and in that case, he's infinitely more valuable than the sub-lieutenant Sitar. So almost the fact that he gets called unreliable, to me, is... It's perverse. It kind of makes it more valuable when it turns out he's actually coming across truthfully. And that's why I think that you have this move in the end, certainly after Jarak starts talking about the ship deployment and all the rest of it that I assume that Picard got out of him. This is why I think that Picard effectively trusts him in the end and they go across. Mm. And I'm happy to have Picard make call the shots on this one, because I think he's right.
Yeah, well, I mean, he did say, you've got him. You must decide if he's telling the truth or not.
Yeah.
So why wasn't maybe a few more starships joining him, too? I guess we could ask these forever. Let's just go on with what we have. So now we get to get a look at Romulan technology up close. And just as Picard is giving out the assignments, the scout ship blows up. They couldn't detect a self-destruct, apparently. But do you agree with the, Sitar / Jarak? If you were, he doesn't really consider himself defecting either. He's just passing along critical information. Is he a traitor?
Yeah, I think that I'm completely with him. I really do buy into this character because he doesn't consider himself a defector. He's not coming across because it's an easier life for him at the moment, and he's certainly not considering like selling out his side. He's coming across on a humanitarian mission to prevent mass destruction on both sides. That's what he believes. Mm. As a result, he's not prepared for these people to pick up technology or make small little gains on the side. And I think that the conversation he has with Riker in sickbay is particularly good, because he starts talking about saying he's not a traitor and that all that the Federation sees is an opportunity to exploit. And I think I think this also betrays the fact that this guy isn't a sub-lieutenant. This guy is clearly an admiral, because as an admiral and the way he talks, he says, look, don't think about this as a I'll have a chance to see this one piece of tech, and don't think about it in terms of getting across to my ship. You have to see it in much broader strokes than that. And I think that the way that he has that insight, whereas Whereas, you know, people like, you know, Geordi were saying, hey, look, there's some tech there. Let's get across and see what's there. I think it really shows that he's, you know, he's much more of a commander, much more of a, you know, almost a statesman in his outlook. It's much broader. And he understands that that the issues at stake are not whether or not, you know, the Federation wants to go and get the latest, you know, replicated technology from the Romulans. It's much more that there is potentially the survival of both sides at stake.
Mm.
So I really, you know, I don't want to come across as a complete fanboy, but I completely buy into to Jarak and his argument, and I see where he's coming from. And that's really why I think he's a really great character, because had it been a poorly written show, he would have just said, hey, you're not going to get my ship, bang. And that would be the end of the discussion. Whereas I think that the conversations just show such depth of character in this dude. Anyway, I'm going to defer now before I bore everyone.
Well, it's a good thing Geordi didn't get aboard that ship any sooner than he did could have, because obviously they would have went with it. But, you know, even in the sick bay, you know, how fortunate, you know, something of Romulan medicine. And, oh yeah, I had some chance to gain some experience recently. Ah, the Galundan Corps, the two officers. And I'm like, I'm with Riker. You know, that's a lot that you would have known for a logistic clerk. And he says, well, it was common knowledge. And I thought, common knowledge? It was a failed Romulan mission where they were trying to probably put a base on Galundan Corps. I don't think the Romulan Empire would want that to be much common knowledge.
Oh, I don't know. It depends on whether the Romulans are playing the political game there by telling everybody that they had this great battle, and, you know, they're trying to put a political spin on things to the population. They may not have given out the big details, but they might have certainly said, you know, we scored a victory over it. A bit like the Nazis, propaganda, war propaganda. At the end of the day, you know, they're saying that they've had this great success when obviously, quite obviously, they didn't or whatever. But it's just a you know, that I could believe that if they said it was common knowledge, it may have been common knowledge that they had, you know, they've been told that they'd had this great great victory, but or you know, it certainly thwarted an attempt by the Federation to spy on them or whatever. But I can believe that when he says. I can believe that when he says that.
Okay. All right. So then, you know, one thing that I wondered about the computer, are they really so unknowledgeable of Romulus that the computer wouldn't know the temperature of water on Romulus? Or let's even flash a little forward when he asks for a Romulan L, but unfortunately, it would require the molecular structure of the beverage in question. And as you are no doubt aware, we don't know crap about your planet, apparently. But yet, Romulan ale has been, you know, how do I say, smuggled throughout the Federation for hundreds of years. So, I mean, do you think the computer would just really not know the molecular structure of a Romulan ale? Or do you think that's one of those, since it's illegal, it's not going to be in the computer?
You've just brought up a good point there, Lou. When you said we don't know what Romulan ale is, I thought, oh well, that's true. This is one of the first times they've really met a Romulan, so they wouldn't know. But actually, you're right. Of course, yes, it's been discussed in the original series. We all know about Romulan ale, so therefore it must be. You know, somebody must have found it on the black market and replicated it. Now, whether they don't allow it on starships, the Federation starships, is a different matter, I suppose. You don't want everybody rolling around drunk. But it always makes me laugh when they, you know, whoever it is always says water, room temperature, and it produces it in a glass.
Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute. I wanted a goldfish bowl full of water so I could put my goldfish in it. Don't give me a glass of water. They didn't specify a glass of water.
8 ounces.
So, yeah, that's right. Yeah. What temperature? Room temperature. Whose room? I like my room hotter than, you know, than some people, maybe colder than others.
I don't want Worf's room.
And what about Romulans' room temperature? We don't know anything about the Romulan culture at this point, so we don't know whether they have a hotter or colder sun. And yeah, okay, semantics. But at the end of the day, Romul, you're right. I hadn't thought about that. Romulan ale was discussed, so yeah, they should really know what it is.
I would have put it in the computer and called it a Mickey Mouse. Computer, one Mickey Mouse. It looks like Romulan ale, but how do you know? It's illegal. I would never do such a thing.
This sounds like you've got an illicit still around the back of your house.
Of Romulan ales. Yeah. I have people lined up for Romulan ale.
Yeah, oh, it's, but... it's...
And now that the United States is friends with Cuba, I guess, pull off the cigars. You don't need to hide them anymore. Okay. So do you think it's against the Treaty of Algeron to put cameras in a Romulan quarter or prisoners' quarters? I mean, you know, that little sly look as he looks up and he looks around and looks over here and then he looks down and pulls out this little chip and then he looks up again and looks around like, I can't believe I got away with this. I mean, do you think it's against the treaty to put cameras in there?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, that, because they do that quite often, don't they, where they have people... Yeah, you never see CCTV cameras in any... Uh-oh. Any place. There must be other ways of recording it, I suppose. They have a sensors that can record things, so cameras not necessarily needed, I would have thought.
I mean, it's bad enough the transporter didn't detect something illicit in his boot. A little tiny round thing that's not consistent with the rest of the uniform.
I mean, yeah, how would the transporter know what to lock onto if they don't know what a Romulan is? They don't know the makeup and how they're put together. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it should have caught some. I can't imagine the transporter. It had to dematerialize that object. It had to scan it and be able to put it back together, but yet not detect that it was there in his boot.
And yet the clothes that he's wearing are made from Romulan fibers and things, which are not natural to the Federation. So they should have been picked up as illegal things.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, James, you're quiet. Has the baby woke up?
No, not at all. But, okay, I mean, there are a lot of problems with beaming in general, right? So instead of defending how you can beam across a Romulan that you don't necessarily have a pattern for, or, you know, why he manages to keep his smarty uncovered in his boot, I think I'm going to leave it this week because I was just sitting there thinking, yeah, I mean, these issues are valid issues of beaming, but there are other issues with beaming that we should also probably be concerned about.
Like the actual beaming itself.
Yeah. I think that once on the network there was a discussion and they reckoned that, every time you beamed, effectively you died or you were euthanized and another person popped out the other end. There was this a clone. And I'm not entirely convinced that is true, or at least that's not the desirable explanation that I want to hear with the transporter room. There's a lot wrong with beaming. I'm happy to let this go. I'm even happy to let go the fact that he pulls out his smartie, looks at it, he then looks at it again, and then he puts it back in. And it reminded me of the terrible episode in season 1 when the bow breaks, when, you know, Wesley goes over to Dr. Crusher and Dr. Crusher hands him something. Wesley then opens his hand, suspiciously looks at it.
What's this?
apparently no one notices, even though there's someone standing right next to them. Mm. So it's a little bit, it's obviously done for camera. I think that you probably need to introduce something so that you're not, you don't just think that they pulled something out of their sock at the end of the episode.
Got it.
And I thought it was okay.
So I guess a real important question, Doc, would be this. If I use a transporter and I accidentally got duplicated, which one of us would you want doing the show?
Oh, but both. What's wrong with having two Lus?
Don't you think there'd be a lot of arguing going back and forth here that you just have to sit back and listen to? What do you mean by that? What do you mean by that?
It's strange. Do people naturally argue with their clones more than they do with other people?
I'd have to say.
I would have thought that, if anything, you know, having a clone, you should have your clones back, right? You should be able to. You should have the same interest at heart, but maybe not. Maybe you've become too competitive.
If I saw myself, if I met myself, I'd be constantly arguing with myself because there would be the part of me that sees me as other people see me and realize how bad I am.
Mm.
And therefore I'd be telling myself to stop doing that and act properly.
Now, I'd have too many arguments about which one of us is a better lover.
I don't know how you'd actually work that one out.
That's the problem. We both would be trying to up the other. Yeah, get it? Up. Never mind.
Up the... Oh, God.
So now comes one of four communiques that Picard will receive. Two from Admiral and Starfleet and one from a Klingon vessel, Bortas. And in the first one, the Admiral conveys that Romulan is pissed about they want their man back now. And, you know, they're going to take that position of Proxima to Nelvana 3. Klingon vessel Bortas completely went over my head. Completely went over my head. I just, you know, at the time, I just assumed, well, why can't Worf take the communication right there on the bridge? But maybe they get communications from Klingon ships 1,000 times a day. Who knows?
I think this isn't the first reference, right, to the Klingons. There's another one. There's one earlier than this. So I think that what it is that Picard's in his ready room and he's thinking, and he invites Worf in, and then it stops. And I think that's all you see. And then you get the incoming transmission from a Klingon ship, and then Worf gets sent away. And so I absolutely did not see this the first time round. Hell, I'm pretty sure I probably didn't see it the second or third time round. And when I've not seen it for a couple of years, I sit back and I think, this is great, because I don't see it. And I challenge anyone that they see it first time.
Oh, no.
But it's so good. It's such a good a slight hint that then completely turns in the final shot. And that's all great.
Okay. So Data and LaForge analyze the data from the sensors and determine that the entire thing was staged. Obviously, the Warbird kept their distance, and they could have destroyed the scout ship, maybe even the Enterprise, but they didn't. So they just turned around and walked away. So what do you guys think of the investigation then? I mean, did they do pretty good there? I mean, they had engine logs and power output for both vessels in real time.
Yeah, you can only really investigate what you can see. It's hard to say, really. I mean, they made it look believable, but they still have this nagging doubt in the back of their mind. You know, it's like Geordi says, do you believe what you see? You know, do you go with your head and believe what you see? Or do you go with your gut instinct that there is something more to it than this?
Right.
I do like that discussion he has with Data about you know, that gut feeling that you have, but you know, because you know there's something wrong somewhere, but you just can't prove it. So yeah, this is one of the better uses for Data that I like about the early season Next Generation, is that you are finding out more about humanity through Data, you know, through interactions with Data. I do like this idea of, you know, they all know there is something wrong somewhere, but they just can't find that bit of evidence they need.
Okay. All right. So, Picard asked Data to come to the ready room and says, hey, could you do me a favor and press the record button in your brain? That way we have a record of these events, and if we're destroyed, you're going to be the black box to tell history how this unfolded. Do you think Data's brain would survive? Go ahead.
Well, does that mean that they jettison Data as times are getting tough? So, you know, as the Enterprise is under attack, they go, oh, Data, you know, get ready to be shoved out an airlock, and he kind of floats in space for eternity as a black box.
Yeah, until they, you know, someone picks him up. Just like Lore.
The Borg.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Okay, or in a couple seasons, a Romulan. Let's see here. Now it's time for the interrogation. We have Riker and Deanna, good cop, bad cop, or should I say bad cop and worse cop. You're a spy, aren't you? Yes, I am. So Do you think, I mean, obviously in an interrogation, I'm here to tell you that there is weapons being put on this base and we're going to launch a secret offensive against you. But I'm not going to tell you the location and the strength of the Romulan fleet. Was Riker really expecting military secrets here?
Well, he seemed to be. But I mean, I think that the kind of guy that they were expecting is a guy that wants to come over, you know, get a bit of fame and fortune maybe out of the Federation for kind of, you know, by selling stuff on his own people. And I think that's not the character they're dealing with. They're coming across a guy who's a, you know, fundamentally a conscientious objector coming across. And I think that people should have cottoned on to that relatively soon. But Riker seems to keep going on to, hey, you know, you're a spy. Come on, you're a spy. You can tell me you're a spy, aren't you? Mm-hmm. And I thought that the cross-examination and the interrogation was somewhat one-dimensional. And it showed a slight lack of imagination on the Federation side. I thought that we were... When I watch this, I do sit there and I think, look, well, certainly when I first watched this, I was there saying, you know, you have to listen to this guy. And I was frustrated that they weren't listening to him. And instead, they were actively winding him up and alienating him, even though he's come over as someone who's trying to do the right thing.
Right.
And I got frustrated with Riker in this episode for that reason. And I mean, you know, maybe it's because I'm just too naive and I should be more like Riker. But the way I felt about it was certainly on Jarek's side, and I didn't. I would hope that Riker and our heroes, quote unquote, would see this and act earlier.
Okay. All right. So let's see here.
Let me clarify. When I say I want them to act earlier, that's not me saying that the episode's bad in any way. That's me saying that I'm engaged throughout the episode, willing this to happen and really wanting this kind of, you know, to be progressed. And I think there's a difference between people going, oh, you know, why are these people acting stupid? And you hoping that they are going to act in a better way. And throughout, by the way, I'm always engaged and I'm always kind of willing them to do better.
Okay.
Just in case everyone thinks I hate this perfect episode.
Oh, I know. We can pick it apart, but we still love it. Here's another thing. With their pants? Do you remember a week or so ago I said, here we go again with Data, and he just doesn't understand what someone's saying. He doesn't quite get the metaphor that the Romulans are going to get caught with their pants down on Nirvana 3.
Actually, yes. So in light of that, because we were quite harsh last week, I have to say that I'm a complete hypocrite, and I think it just comes down to how well written, how, you know, how nice they have managed to make the reference. Because I was perfectly happy with the idea of I was perfectly happy with Data and Geordi having the exchange about you know, because your gut tells you, and then and pants down, and because to a certain extent, it wasn't just, you know, a one-liner and then let's have fun at Data. There was back and forth, and you almost saw Data potentially, like, you know, throwing some of this stuff back at Geordi, almost to wind him up in a way. Mm. Almost to the point of, look, dude, I'm highlighting you've got some pretty weird language being thrown around here, you know. So I like this. I thought it was fun.
Okay. So let's go to 10 forward, where Data is staring at Sitaw, because that's his name at the point. What do you think about the conversation with Data and Sitaw?
I didn't really.
You didn't like it?
To be honest. Yeah, it was just a conversation we've seen a few times with Data, I think, with when the first time he meets an alien and he's studying them. It was pretty much of a... I thought it was just a bit of a sort of a filler scene, really.
Mm. I thought it was just, you know, the means to get him to talking. What about you, James?
Oh, I mean, I've spoken a lot already, but I like it. I like the. I'm a big sucker for Data. I do like the character Data, and as it's very clear, I'm coming across as a complete sucker for Jarek in this episode, and I like him, and I think the episode is, I think it's very nice how they bring the Jarek character out, and I like his interactions with Data because it allows him to make that leap that, even though he would still consider himself to be a man of principles and not a traitor, there are certain things that he has to recognize as like truths, and I think that all starts with his discussion with Data, and I think there's a bit where he says, look, it's very unlikely you're going to be returned, you're going to be able to be allowed to go back home, and it's kind of a relatively cold reaction, but
it brings
Jarek pretty slightly into the kind of the real world, and then they head off to the holodeck, and you almost see when they go to the holodeck, it's like Data saying, look, if you wanted to go home, look, we can reproduce home for you, and Data's completely missing what he misses about home. He's not missing the fact he can go to a live TV show and sit there and look at the stars. That's not what he is, what he longs for, and I think that it's through this experience that he realizes that he has to do what is necessary in order to in order to make things progress. So I like all of this.
Okay.
But don't talk to me. I'm rambling too much, and I've got too much love to put onto this episode. We'll get complaints.
All right, Paul. Well, I think you and I can finish, and he can just go ahead and take care of the baby for the rest of the night. But I don't know. I kind of liked it. I like the 10-4 thing, and I do like the Valley of Chula. It's a little quick. I mean, had he been gone for a week or two, then take him to the Valley of Chula. And I thought, wow, the Valley of Chula is created pretty darn perfectly, but yet we can't make a Romulan ale. But okay. So he sees a Valley of Chula, and this is not my home anymore. Turn it off. And then when you get the holodeck grid, he goes, this is my home now. Who says you're going to get to live on a holodeck? I don't know. But here we go. That's when we arrange a meeting between myself and Captain Picard. Tell him Admiral Jacques wants to see him. And that's when we get our fourth and final communication. Captain, we have confirmed you are holding Admiral Aladar Jirak. He has been identified as a really, really bad person. So don't believe any of his BS.
Despite saying that I wasn't going to come back into any of this, let me just put one thing out here. This episode makes very good use of the cuts from scene to scene, and then also the exposition that it gives you and the manner in which it gives it to you. So I'll give an example. You have the issue where the Romulan says, I need to speak to your captain. Tell him that Admiral Jarek wants to speak to you. Now, you would imagine that the next scene would be Admiral Jarek speaking to the captain and confessing. But we've already had that scene. We've had, we know that he's taken that step and he's acknowledged it. So we don't have to see that. So that entire exchange where he would have presented himself as Admiral Jarek and the rest of it is cut out. And what we see is the reaction to that. And I think that moves us along really well and really quickly. And, you don't need this, the stuff that is cut out of the episode really allows you to focus on the important, on the more important stuff and the better exchanges between, Picard and Jarek that come immediately after this, because Picard, truthfully, had Admiral Jarek come to him and said, hey, no, I'm Admiral Jarek, realistically the exchange is, well, that's very interesting and we're going to have to find out some more information here, but you and they would have to then go in touch with Starfleet security and run their ID check and whatever, but the fact that they cut it out is great because it just means you can keep the ball rolling, and I think it's really, maybe the best word to describe this is it's tight. It really is tight in the way that it's cut, and And also, at the top of the episode, they use a very good captain's log of getting all the information you need down so that the scenes that follow are not just exposition being spouted by characters that you wouldn't believe. It's clearly, there is information you have to get across to the viewer, but the fact that it's in the captain's log allows you to do it, and it allows you to keep the scenes in the episode a lot cleaner and a lot crisper.
Faster pace.
But now I'm going to shut up.
Well, another thing is that, you know, I think there was a 2-hour and 22-minute delay time from, you know, Starbase whatever on Lyra something or another. So you figure there's got to be a 2-hour, 22-minute delay time from the time Picard says, this guy says he's Admiral Aladar Jura. Can you confirm that? Then it takes time for Starfleet to confirm that, and then another 2 hours and 22 minutes to send it back. So the time from the time you hear tell him Admiral Jarak wants to see him to the time he sees Admiral Jarak, you figure at least 5 hours have already had to have passed, if not more, and since they were on a 48-hour deadline. But you know, like you say, for the scene pacing, they obviously had to cut it the way they did. So, let's see. One world's butcher is another world's hero, because he was the commander of the raid on the Norcon outpost, was it? Which we don't know what that was or how many people actually died.
Yep, no, true. I think that's and that's pretty standard, right?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you guys still celebrate Independence Day, bunch of traitors.
You're welcome to come back and try and take us away.
No, I'm joking, of course.
But when you but do, bring some crumpets.
Just remember that America is part of the empire that Britain didn't want.
That's true. Yeah, we're the coffee filter after the pot's been brewed, huh? That may not have been a correct analogy, but whatever. I've never been good at those. Okay, so one world's butcher is another world's hero. So that was a pretty good exchange back and forth between them. I detect a small continuity error, and see if you guys followed this or thought about this. Jarak says, and I wrote this down word for word, he says, 4 months I tried desperately to persuade the High Command that another war would destroy the Empire. And, you know, they got tired of my arguments and finally was sent off to command some distant sector. This was my only recourse. Now, later, when, you know, Picard, when the Enterprise arrives to, I forgot the name of it.
The planet.
Yeah, the planet. I forgot the name of the planet. Set like Nelvana 3. So they get to Nelvana 3 and they find that there's nothing there. And perhaps you would tell me why we are here, Admiral. And, you know, Picard figures out that there's no base. And he says, you were reassigned 4 months ago. They knew of your dissatisfaction. And I thought, do you think maybe Picard misunderstood? It's a glitch in the writing where he said, 4 months I tried desperately. He didn't say 4 months I tried desperately, or they reassigned me 4 months ago. I think Picard just leaped to, you know, you were reassigned 4 months ago. They knew of your dissatisfaction.
It is for her that I am here. Not to destroy the Romulan Empire, but to save it. 4 months I tried desperately to persuade the High Command that another war would destroy the Empire.
Is it possible they could have been feeding you disinformation? You said that you had been censured, reassigned 4 months ago. They knew of your dissatisfaction. Could all this have been to test your loyalty?
No. No.
Glitch. It's a nitpick. I admit that. But did you guys detect that at all? Pick up on that?
Not here.
No, I didn't.
Okay. Well, good. Any Data, Logan, anything? Kieran? Oh, by the way, Kieran, what's the deal with other people jumping on your forum post feedbacks? They're getting in before you. I don't know what to make of that. Okay, so Data does the next log that says we have entered the neutral zone, a direct violation of the Treaty of Algeron. So I guess, you know, and we keep going back and forth on whether the neutral zone is an area that anybody can go into. They just can't cross to the Federation side. And this clearly says that we have entered the neutral zone in direct violation of the Treaty of Algeron. So obviously it's a no-touch zone. Maybe that puts that to bed finally.
I think it certainly becomes that, you know, the way that you're, the impression that you're given the latter TNG is that it's a, you know, it's a section where neither party can go into rather than a section where both can. But you don't necessarily have that throughout the throughout the early seasons. Yeah. Well, then maybe it's like, you know, you can go in there, but only on a Tuesday.
Mm. Neutral zone Wednesday?
Yeah, for example. So it's yours. It's the Romulan side, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday, and Federation on all the other days.
Yeah, they get four, we get three. That's not fair. Or we never know.
Okay, so then you share. You have to share Sunday. Share Sunday.
Yes, Cooperation Sunday. Okay. Another thing is with the neutral zone, then, does that mean the Pakleds can go in the neutral zone, or the Vulcans, or the Klingons? It's just the Federation has to stay out.
I assume it's just the treaty can only be between the two people that signed the treaty, or any kind of, like, you know, multilateral parties that signed the treaty. Having said that, in order to get to the neutral zone, you're likely to have to go through either Federation or Romulan space. So that's probably going to be more of an issue for the Pakleds than what they do when they get to the neutral zone.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So other than Riker wishing they could fight their way through this, because it was obviously too easy, Data, in fact, confirmed there's absolutely nothing on the planet. Never was, never will be. So then what did our probes detect? Maybe those cloaked Romulan ships that decloak and start pounding on the Enterprise? Sounds like the Kobayashi Maru. All Picard needs is an apple and just have the right touch.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So, but like I said, you know, the time to leave. Oh, before they start pounding on the Enterprise and we find there's nothing there, it's time to leave. Geordi, get us the hell out of here. I hear you, Commander. But unfortunately, like I said, the Warbirds decloak and begin to whack at the Enterprise. And Picard, he fires back quick, doesn't he? No.
Actually, by the way, throughout this, you've got a great kind of building of tension.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got building of tension from the fact that, yes, we're going to go and we're going to see what's on the planet. You don't know what you're going to find on the planet. Then you don't find anything on the planet. And then Jarek comes onto the bridge, and then there's a showdown there, and there's more and more and more stuff that gets piled on. Then you start to realize that you might be in a trap, and then you think, well, are you going to be able to get out of the trap quick enough? And then the Romulan warbirds decloak, and then at this point you're thinking, well, you're not getting out. It's, you know, something's going to have to happen that, you know, something bad's going to happen, or you just don't see where it's going on this. And I think because, you know, certainly I did not see where I was going. It's just such a great kind of, you know, final couple of minutes of this particular build-up that makes this such so memorable.
Yeah. All right. So they get a beating from the Romulans and the lead ship. Guess who's commanding that? Yep. Ambassador Tomalak.
The great man himself.
James, did you pick up what I just said? Anything?
Sure, I have. I'm standing back because I'm talking too much and I'm stepping on our guest's toes.
Yeah, but I lobbed an obvious one at you, waiting for you to correct me.
What? Did you?
Yeah.
I didn't catch it. Tomalak?
I said Ambassador Tomalak. He's not an ambassador.
Did you say ambassador?
Uh-huh. Because I was playing with the future episode there. Ambassador Tomlai. He's a Ryman and captain. Okay,
listen, people, I'm clearly sleep deprived. I need to go and have some rest.
Oh, that's
because,
true.
Because, yeah, I'm not firing on all thrusters here, am I?
It sounds like you are to me. Although I did detect last week when I said I was going to put in some audio, I heard this. that must have been your head hitting your microphone. Okay. So Picard offers to leave the neutral zone, but Tomalak asks, without even an apology, Captain? And Picard offers it, but we all know it won't do. So the Romulan has the Enterprise in its clutches, and there's nothing anyone can do about it. Or is there? Dun, dun, dun. Mr. Worf, go ahead before we give away the secret sauce.
Sure. And I keep threatening that I'm not going to talk anymore, and I keep ending up talking more. We mentioned in The Enemy, or at least I mentioned in The Enemy, that I can see certainly like proto Gul Dukat in Tomalak. And again, you see him say, without an apology, and then you kind of, that's something that Dukat would do. He likes the idea of humiliating people.
Oh, yeah.
I think that cut from very much the same cloth, and maybe we owe Tomalak a certain amount of respect, because certainly certain aspects here flow into Dukat. And obviously Dukat's a greater character in terms of what he becomes.
Right.
And it's unfortunate that Tomalak kind of disappears now forever. When he comes back in two episodes, but I can certainly see where you might have got inspiration for Dukat and his mannerisms and what he expects from Picard. Is I see it being completely transferable over to the Sisko Dukat rivalry, for want of a better word.
Oh yeah, yeah, and obviously, I'm sorry, you were going to say something, Paul.
No, I was going to say I like the character of Tomalak, and I think Andreas Katsoulas, who plays him, was a fantastic actor. Sadly, passed away, of course. Mm. I've been going through a Babylon 5 rewatch recently, and he plays a character called Jakar in Babylon 5, and he is just as good in that as he is as Tomalak. Totally underused. I think they should have brought him back more, and as the Romulans are in general in Star Trek, I think. But I love his style. I love his poise. I love the way he's so devious and calculating and thinks he's won, and very smug. Just typical Romulan. And I love the way he was played and portrayed.
Right. And his intention... Go ahead.
So a word that I like to use with, certainly with Dukat, and you can see it in Tomalak, is it's the verbosity, the amount that they like the sound of their own voice, the amount that they talk, they over talk, and they kind of Q is the same, right? When you have these great villains, they put on a show with how they are going to describe it. Very, very rarely a memorable villain comes in and just punches you in the back of the head and walks off. They make it, they're showmen at the same time. And you certainly have that with Tomalak, and it's certainly very well delivered. So I also, echo Paul's comments here. Mm.
Yeah, and of course, Dukat was in love with the sound of his own voice as well, like you said. Okay, so the whole goal here was to lure the Enterprise into the neutral zone so they could capture it and display its broken hull in the center of the Romulan capital as a symbol of their victory. It would inspire their armies for generations to come. That sounds good. But unfortunately, are you prepared to die today, Tomalak? I thought Tomalak's face was perfect for the view screen at this moment. Don't you agree? Just the back and forth between him and Picard, I expected more from you. And then when he gets more, the blood drains from his face. I mean, I think, Andreas, is that his name? Andreas. I thought he was a perfect Romulan in that moment.
Absolutely, yes. It's just the classic, I expected more from you. Well, maybe a little bit more, but not too much. Not too much.
Not that much.
Yes. You don't go beating me now. So yes, it's yeah, it's just a brilliant, brilliant reaction from him, and that's why I like him so much. Is he portrays a Romulan? He is what I consider to be the quintessential Romulan. Mm. I think he's the model that everybody should be made, and even James Sloyan, to be honest, is doing a fantastic job, and I think the pair of them really do nail this this race.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, Spock's dad really didn't make Romulans; these two did.
Yes.
Actually, I think that's a very, very good point. I'm just, off the top of my head, thinking, I don't think we've had any better Romulans throughout than either of these two. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to go through as fast as I can to think if there's anyone else there. I think there's actually some decent performances in some of the... I quite like the Section 31 Robin and storyline that goes on. Mm-hmm. But I don't think, you know, I don't think we get this kind of Romulan that often. And I'm just trying to think of some of the stuff. Certainly when you get into things like unification, when you get into the mind's eye, I think that they become much more caricatured than the rounded nature of these guys here.
Yeah, I think the later ones are trying to be what these two set it up as, and nobody could really equal what they did.
You mean you guys can't wait till we see Sela?
I was thinking Sela, actually, when you mentioned I can't think of anybody better. Yeah, that was just Denise Crosby.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I thought Sela was useless. Ridiculous.
Am I the only... Okay, let me put a question out there for the listening audience. Am I the only person that doesn't mind Sela? Because I really don't mind her. I thought that she was... I
don't mind her. Maybe... It's just the fact that she was played by Denise Crosby really sort of... it took away from the character. Everybody was just looking at her thinking, well, that's Tasha Yar.
The exact same face of Denise Crosby and of Yar.
Actually, maybe also the thing is that when I was younger, I thought that it was like, you know, really cool that they did that. They brought her back. And maybe it's just that it's probably slightly shallow, right? It's like, you know, it's, they go, hey, look at this, blonde Romulan. And you kind of go, wow, that's, you know, I haven't been fed that before. Mm. And I think that there was certainly a novelty factor with Sela. But I remember that at the time when these episodes were coming out, when I mean these, I mean Unification in particular and stuff, I remember being, you know, anticipating this stuff like on a weekly basis. So when, you know, they unveiled Sela, it was like the new thing. I was, you know, I was bought a hook, line and sinker. Mm. Which I accept goes to show you that I'm not a good judge and I shouldn't be on any episode review podcast.
We'll keep you off the Sela ones. And I don't know. I mean, I like the fact that it draws, you know, calls back to a future episode we're going to be doing, which is probably another five. But, you know, I don't know. For some reason, Sela just bothered me. As much as I liked Tasha Yar, her alter ego Sela, she just kind of bothered me. Yeah. But we'll get to those later. But anyway, as I said, that poor Tom Locke, he just can't win. So as a Klingon ship's decloak, and then I look forward to our next meeting, Captain. I wonder how pissed the Klingons were that they didn't get their glorious battle. Talk, Picard.
Yes, you drag us all the way through the neutral zone to this desolate planet with nothing on it, and we don't even get to shoot anybody.
Mm-mm. Nothing. But all right, so let's hit the end, and this is where it gets touching and sad that Jarek lost everything, his home, his family, for nothing. So he commits suicide with I think they call it a phylodosin chip. We don't know what a Romulan L is, but we know the phylodosin chips.
Yeah, it goes with the phylloxylian fish as well.
And the flu. Yeah. So, and another example of Dr. Crusher just can't save anyone. Don't put him in the stasis. We'll get around to him later. Or, you know, clear! Nothing. She just says, well, he's dead. Too late. Sorry.
She does kill more people than any other doctor, though.
Mm-hmm. She does not save anyone. And that's, we've noticed, we should have done that. We should have taken note, James, of all the people she's killed over the years? I guess we still got time.
You mean there are plenty more to come? I will not be party of a anti-crusher movement here, because I was going to wind up Paul a little bit earlier to say that I was very appreciative of her performance in the scene, but it slipped my mind. Crusher's great.
She didn't do too bad in this episode, although when she had, who was it who stood
she
over
loses
her shoulder?
One patient.
She loses one patient, but she was also, there's also a scene where they're discussing whether they believe him or not, and she gave the old wooden face performance again.
Yeah, but it's bad that they've had two Romulans on the ship and she's killed both. Or she couldn't save either one.
She's a one-woman genocide.
Yes.
You say, you've had experience with Romulans before. Yes. Yeah. Best not to ask.
Yes, I had some chance to kill one recently. I mean, gain some experience recently. Okay, let's see here.
You're right. You guys aren't like Vulcans, are you? Oh. I was expecting something completely different there.
Why didn't she suck some of his ribosomes out of him just in case she runs across another Romulan and needs to give him a blood transfer?
Yeah.
You never know. I mean, you come across another hurting Romulan and you got to save, and you want to play nice with the Romulans to keep some ribosomes.
You can just imagine the scene in sickbay where she's doing an autopsy on him, and there's blood, guts, and gore all over the floor, the table, and somebody walks in and she says, "What? I've got to find out how their physiology works."
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm sure she would have done an autopsy. So what do you think they did with him after she was done? He died and he's laying there in his bed, and the camera turns off, the ship flies away, and now they've got a dead Romulan on their ship. What are they going to do with them? Put them in cold storage? Shoot them in a torpedo?
Yeah,
package
them
up?
They put them in.
Go ahead.
I think they must have put them into the Ira Graves kind of a coffin and left them spinning in space around in the neutral zone.
Or shot them toward Romulus.
Yeah.
Okay, but it was interesting, he writes a letter to his wife and daughter, and he knows they can't deliver, but maybe someday we might. So that's pretty nice, and everything turns around, and Jarek is actually an honorable man, and it's a shame he died. Just think of, just like Voyager, when they took aboard a Borg, and they transformed her.
Yeah, I think it was pretty sad. I mean, he did basically the right thing for what he for the right reasons, what he believed to be the right thing for the right reasons. He was absolutely adamant that he had to stop this war, and he sacrificed everything he had in order to save his people from annihilation, or certainly getting into a very long war. And it is sad that he decided to kill himself at the end of it, because he had nothing else to live for, really. I mean, what was he going to do? He was going to live with the Federation. That wasn't his, they weren't his people. They weren't his thing. Mm-hmm. But he couldn't go back, and he got himself into this position where, even had he stopped the war, what was he expecting to do then? I think the same thing would have applied. I think it was a one-way trip, really. He couldn't have gone back if the war had been stopped. And he may well have been declared a hero in the Federation, and maybe they would have honored him in some way. But at the end of the day, as he said, it wasn't really his style of life. So I think he was pretty much set up to kill himself.
So you didn't think he was going to go to Earth and open a pub serving Romulan ale? That's his new career move.
It's illegal.
I suppose that would
underground.
Maybe Mutt. There must be, some parts of, like Vegas or so, New Las Vegas, where you can go and set up Romulan ale for medicinal purposes.
Or just non-Federation planet that's really close by where people can get their real stuff. When I get Italian from a real Italian and not the Olive Garden. Be nice to have a Romulan ale from a real Romulan. Okay, well then, it's going on midnight, guys. Is there anything else we want to bring up?
No, I think that's about it.
Okay, well, then this is episode 10, so James, it'll be you to...
Okay, well, it's now time to discuss our final thoughts and ratings on this episode, ranging from 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. So, okay, I've spoken far too much this episode already. This episode's a 5 out of 5 for me, and more than that, for a very long time, I've been telling people that my favourite episode of Trek so far has been Where No One Has Gone Before. This episode pips that one. I think, you know, I can say without fear of contradiction that in my mind, this is the best episode of Trek that they put out in TNG up to this point. I think that this is, really quite fantastically written. I really like the Jarak character, and I think that, this is a very early Ron D. Moore script, and we know what he goes on to and what he becomes in the wider scheme of things. And I just think that the quality here is just absolutely great. Top mark from my side. Sometimes people ask about where do you start watching Next Generation if you want to get someone into it, and people will say, well, you don't want to start at the beginning, or you might want to skip the first couple of seasons. And I've even heard people say, well, you skip season 3 as well. That's complete nuts. You can't miss out quality like this in my mind, and I think that this is just this is just terrific all round. And the story that it tells within Star Trek, I think it's a sophisticated story with rounded three-dimensional characters and great tension. I don't see the twists come in, but there are breadcrumbs there for people to have picked up on. This is just all round. As I mentioned to begin with, this is all round perfect. I have nothing to complain about here. So, Paul or Lou, who goes next?
Well, Paul, I've already put a 5 in your ratings and closed the file, so if you're not going to do a 5, you're off. You're done. Nah, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
This is actually the second 5 that I would give up to where you are now, up to this point in your reviews. The first 5 for me is Elementary Dear Data, which I think is a really fun episode and what have you. But that's been discussed elsewhere.
You gave it a. You were here with us, Paul Wright.
Well, there you go.
Was a 5.
Yep.
So yeah, there you go.
Yes, it's always been in my top 5. It was on my Desert Island when we did Desert Island Trek. This one is a 5, as we've for obvious reasons. I mean, this really, the first time we hear of the Romulans in The Next Generation is the neutral zone, right at the very end of season 1, and you don't see them, you only hear them, and they say, we are back, and you think, fantastic, the Romulans are back, it's going to be great. And then they don't see anything in any of the season 2 episodes, and suddenly they then turn up in The Enemy, I think, which you discussed a few weeks ago. And this really, I think, is the best. I think this is really where they turn up. This is really what they are about. As we said before, you got the two best Romulan actors that we have in James Sloan and Andreas Katsoulas. They set the standard for everybody else. These are Romulans. This is what they are, the devious, the conniving, chess playing, enemies. I think they're absolutely fantastic. But it's also that there's the other parts of the show as well, that you've got the interaction of Data and Geordi, so you get that little bit extra of the early Data, which is really good, about finding out how humanity works and what it's like to be human. And that's why I do like the early episodes of Star Trek, when Data is this naive and he's still learning, and we find out things about ourselves through his interactions. That being said, a Frenchman who likes Shakespeare is always a bit of a question mark for me. If you listen to the Sci-Fi Waffle podcast, which I think should probably be out by the time this airs, you will hear an interview with Patrick Stewart that was done by another podcast, where he actually does the introduction to the Star Trek show, Space: The Final Frontier, in a French accent, which he actually did once in the preparation for the start of the show. And when they heard it, they said, no, we won't go with the French accent. We'll stick with the British accent. Thank you very much. So, yes, Picard is a Frenchman, but he likes Shakespeare, which is totally British. Bit strange, that. Mm-hmm. But it does set up the show nicely, and that theme does run through the episode. And I like that. I like the idea that Picard can't hide himself in it amongst his crew. He's obviously too recognisable. So, overall, absolutely loved the episode. I don't think there's anything really bad at all in any of the performances or any of the scenes, and that's why it's a 5.
Okay, 5 it is. I've been thinking, I just don't know what to give this, so I think in the end I'll probably give it a 3 or so. That'd be crap. That would be such crap. Maybe a 4. No, I still feel my nose growing uncontrollably, but okay, simply put, I love this one as well. My car's radio has a jukebox feature. Have you guys ever seen that?
No. What, well, you have to sort of put money in and
no.
Records spin round? And
records. round. No, what it is when you put on a thumb drive with music on it, you can copy it over to the jukebox, so then it's always there when you want it. I've got 2 TNG episodes. This is one, and the other I'll announce as it comes up. But I'm sure James is already going, I know which one that is. So this is definitely 100% a 5 for me. It's the first one for the season and only the second one for this series. The music score in the beginning was delicious. I love when it was pounding when they were showing the outside shots of the 2 ships, and then it was subtle when they were on board the ship. We didn't talk about that, and I'm surprised. Obviously, what did you guys think of the music, real quick, James?
Oh, I mean, it's superb, and it really adds to the tension, and it like builds, and it clearly enhances the feel as you're watching the show, mm-hmm. And it's also got it's actually also got the themes and the overtures of just the general Romulan touches that you have. So the pieces are reused in many cases when the Romulans turn up in TNG. So you kind of know where you're at in terms of you're dealing with Romulans, but it's fantastically scored, this episode.
Okay. Paul, what do you think of the music?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I mean, you can't fault it. It's as James says, they do reuse the music later on in it's like the Romulan theme, basically, similar to what they had with the Klingons. Yes, it adds so much to it without being too heavy-handed about it. It is subtle in places and obviously comes in as an orchestral piece in others. Yes, it really does balance it out nicely.
Okay. All right, so the skirmish with the Romulan was also just fun. I don't really know if they ever got to use that tactical stuff that Jarek gave them. He gave them the strengths and the locations of the Romulan fleet, and then even was going to give LaForge information on the Warbird-class starship. Of course, could have all been BS. We don't know. But they never use any of that stuff, and they never refer to it again. I felt for Jarek. What he gave up knowing that his daughter will actually grow up believing and having to deal with the fact that her father was a traitor. There was a lot of misdirection and clever writing in this episode. So surprise, if you didn't hear it the last few times, I'm going to give The Defector 5 undetected for Lotus and Chips.
Very good.
Very good. All right. So, Paul, thank you very much for coming on. I don't have you as I look forward to anything else. So you might want to start considering some things in Season 4 because I think we are booked for the rest of Season 3. But to start thinking of something and get back with me, because obviously we need to have you on at least once or twice a year.
I certainly will. I'll have a look and see what's available. I am now, I recently changed my job, so it means I'm basically more free than I was previously, so I should be able to pick pretty much anything that's available.
Great, because I got tired of what you were charging us to have you come on.
Yeah, this overtime that I have to do. Yeah, terrible.
Yeah. All right, guys. So anyway, Thank you very much for downloading and listening to tonight's show. I hope it was a good one, because I hope we did this episode good and right, because it was one of the best ones that TNG did.
Next time on Star Trek The Next Generation, the crew of the Enterprise must stop a violent fugitive.
Security personnel, full alert.
He's a man-made killer risking death for freedom.
He committed no crime. He's been programmed to be the perfect soldier.
Now, the only escape is to destroy everything in his path on Star Trek The Next Generation.
So join us next week as we review episode 11 of season 3, The Hunted. And we should have Simon on for that one. That's Funky Psy. Was it Funky Psy 1701, I believe?
Correct.
Yep. So we will have Funky Simon on to talk about The Hunted. Thank you again, Paul. And good night, everyone.
Good night, everyone.
Say bye, Paul.
Goodbye, Paul.
All right, so now it's time to go into the forum feedback. And I believe we have left off with Booby Trapper, right? For season 3, episode 6, I believe.
That's my understanding as well. Yes.
Yes. And it starts out with me again, like it did last week. Huh. Wonder why. Okay, now this one here says, which version of the file did you get? Okay, the point was I glitched the first file, and I actually had to I use Acoustica MP3 audio mixer. And you know where as the end of the TNG theme song starts to build up to the end, I stop the audio and I continue it later. Well, I didn't do it on the first episode or on the first version of that file. So if you guys got that, I'm curious. That's going to be your that's going to be the glitched file. So I'd be curious how many people actually downloaded it that quick before I had a chance to fix it. So Kieran McDuff responded saying, I blame the Universal Translator, and I'm listening now and it sounds fine to me. So after he's done consuming it, he comes back to say, I'm going to keep my comments short this week since I'm on the podcast and I've already had my say, but I'd like to thank Lou and James for having me on. It was a bit rushed, unfortunately, for a number of reasons, but hopefully next time we will get the scheduling organized better. I've said it before, I'll say it again. Kieran, next time we will dedicate and actually, I sent an email to you. If you have not read it, read it. If you have not read it, read it, because I have a proposal for you, and I hope you'll take it up, because we do want you on the next one, and we will make it up to you. He says, also, if I sound a bit quiet on this, it's because my son was screaming in the next room and refusing to go to sleep. I didn't notice. In fact, there's a bit of this podcast where I actually stop mid-sentence because my wife walks in and tells me to be quiet. I have since done some home network magic, so now I can record on the other end of the house. It definitely helps. You know, James does that a lot, and he's not even really doing it. For some reason, on these Skype calls, he will say something that sounds like this, and it will just continue on. And for some reason, I call it the time glitch, because then I could start talking, and he's not going to hear it for a couple seconds, and the way to get around that is for me to keep quiet, let him finish his whole sentence, and by the time he's done, Skype has usually caught up with us. So that's what I figured it was, and I just put them together. There's a couple of notes I never quite managed to bring up when recording. First, why is Beverly moving people around the ship in such an odd way? I know they're trying to save power they have, but does she actually say she's moving them to the even-numbered decks? Why would you space them out like that? Bunch them together. Don't spread them out. We didn't pick up on that, did we? I don't think we talked about that at all.
Nope, I don't think so.
All right. Second, why did the Leah hologram breathe heavily the second she got a personality? She's still a hologram. I don't know. Why is a fire crackle? Anyway, I hope you all enjoy this podcast and can actually understand what I'm saying. There's at least one point where I had to repeat myself. I can only apologize for my thick accent. Kieran, you did a lot better than I thought you were going to. I'm serious. I kind of... What?
What a wonderful praise that is.
Yeah.
You did better than I thought you would.
You did. I mean, but still, you sucked. No, you were fine. And I was kind of... I've heard some other podcasts he was on, and I thought it was a little tough to understand. But this one here... Like I said, other than a couple things where you may have gotten a little excited about what he was saying, I understood him completely. So, Kieran, you were doing great, and I can't wait to talk to you again.
I mean, number four. He's a native English speaker. he doesn't need to be congratulated for being understood by another native English speaker.
I guess that does sound a little odd. But you understand what I mean, Kieran. It's all from the heart, man. Right there. Ouch. Okay. Number four, here we go, the fourth week.
Yes, so Endicor is back. Okay, so we need to get some more, start stalking this person to get a bit of more knowledge, because I'm actually now intrigued as to who this new poster is and where they found us. But Endicor, what does that refer to? Because I don't know. I don't know if that's a reference to something. I'm probably going to show bad geek cred, unfortunately. But there we are. Having foreknowledge of 7 seasons of Voyager, it feels very odd to rewatch this episode. Why didn't our hero simply reroute auxiliary power through the secondary EPS manifolds and emit a resonant anti-graviton beam from the main deflector dish? That's how I usually solve all of our problems. In a way, it was very refreshing to watch an episode that didn't draw from the well of standard Trek cliches. It was nice. It also has nice character development, good humor. I was never a boy, and a universe building that I love, especially the Enterprise D in dry dock. And yet, this episode's theme just doesn't fit right with the rest of Star Trek, with the rest of the Star Trek universe. No matter how much technobabble is made fun of, Star Trek's optimistic vision was always that technologies made things better. And from an in-universe perspective, it makes sense that many problems would only have solutions enabled by their 24th century technology. So why is the senior staff now so hesitant to hand over control to the computer? The computer already runs most of the ship's systems automatically. See Contagion. And what about Data? I hope he didn't overhear Riker telling Picard that computers can't be trusted to creatively give orders. Speaking of which, why did the solution require Captain Picard, now apparently the greatest superhuman of all time, to fly them out of the trap all by himself? There really didn't seem to be anything he did that either Data or the computer wasn't capable of. But even if everyone suddenly lost all confidence in Data, you need your best pilot in that chair. So the man you'd want for that is Commander Riker. But no, apparently Picard feels guilty for getting them into this mess in the first place and has to make it up personally by saving the ship, even though it needlessly endangers everyone. And that's on top of ignoring the warnings and the advice of two of his senior officers and firing phasers at the asteroids. Which I'm going to just pause here for a second because I find it always very frustrating when they do the big climax thing and someone has to take over at Khan because he's, quote, the best pilot we have. And I know that Riker is described as the best pilot. I know that Tom Paris is described as the best pilot. I think realistically, I would imagine the differences between the piloting skills on a spaceship of Riker versus just Ensign Nobody is probably going to be minimal. Sometimes you don't even have particularly dangerous missions, and it's like, you know, hey, do you mind popping down to the supermarket to get a loaf of bread? So we need the best driver we can find. No, you don't. Most people can manage a competent visit to the supermarket, and I think most people can manage a competent, visit over to an asteroid belt. I find it a little bit of a bore when they try to, hype this up too much.
Hold on. How about if, because we did not discuss that, and how about if we look at it from another angle? If Wesley Crusher was in the seat and it didn't work, maybe Picard was trying to get him out of the situation where he was going to freak under pressure and not win, and Picard would want to take that kind of responsibility off his shoulders. Because I think even Janeway relieves somebody and says, I'll take care of this one, and gets him out. So, I mean, maybe that's it.
I mean, in a similar way, right, we've had instances where I think the captain has relieved, either the captain or Riker, I can't remember who it was, relieved the transporter chief because it was a dodgy beaming session. I mean,
oh, that was Sarzenka. Yeah, you know, O'Brien, take a nap, you didn't see any of this, you're not involved. But obviously it is because he didn't want to make him involved.
No. There's another one when it was a very dangerous beam, and there was only an X percent chance of him making it. And
that's right. Klingon ship when it was a Klingon. I think it was a Klingon ship when I think it was, you know, Yar had to go to the transporter to beam Riker and some Klingons aboard.
I think
Riker, Data, and Geordi.
It was something like, I just remember someone relieving someone in the transporter room because it would be bad if they died on that, you know, poor extra's watch.
I'll handle the transporter if they're going to be assigned to Oblivion. That was Picard. And I don't remember the exact situation, but it was, again, was O'Brien, you know, if they're going to be assigned to Oblivion, thank you, sir, and he steps aside. I think that's what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Can't think of the name or what it was, but...
I can't either.
Oh, Pulaski. It was Pulaski when she was the old bitch. I mean, when she was the old lady, and the solution was to her hair, and it had to go through the biofilters, and Picard says if she's going to have to be consigned to Oblivion, that's what we're... Oh, I love it when these things just come back to me.
Okay, sure, but do you really need Picard to do the transporter? No. I just didn't get it.
In fact, I would say O'Brien would have been the better person to do the job. But... All right, so... Oh, wait, we better go on.
Okay, let's continue. So this is also where I would have given the episode extra credit for attempting to introduce real scientific concepts like momentum and gravity slingshots into the plot, if not for having to immediately take it away because of magic radiation threat. So 29 minutes of exposure is perfectly fine, but at the 31st minute, everyone is doomed. And I can't remember if I actually called that out, but I think that's great because that's exactly true. You know, great that they got out just a few minutes to spare, but and pay no attention to the 2,000% increase in birth defects aboard the Enterprise.
Yeah,
it's true, of course, because you often have these things where, yeah, you know, if you stay there for like for a couple more minutes, you're absolutely dead, critically so, but there's no side effects of going right up to the wire.
Absolutely. Right, but Endicor's next line might have been way off the mark, though.
Huh? Okay, well, I suppose Beverly could fix that. Oh, wait, the Federation banned genetic engineering. The point being, cartoon logic and real science shouldn't be mixed together in the same plot. Finally, it really bothered me when the holographic Leia Brahms answered, I could do it, and I'm not human, when asked who could perform all of the trillions of calculations required to escape the trap. She was programmed to have the personality of the real Dr. Brahms, so why is she replying like she is the Enterprise's computer? I didn't think the computer gained sentience until Emergence many seasons later. Do you remember Emergence?
Oh, yeah.
That's a good one. And by good, I mean bad.
Can't wait for it.
No, yeah. I also completely agree with this. I hate... I don't like holograms that are aware of themselves. So I really don't like when you go up to them and say, hey, I'm just a hologram, and you know, the reason why you can interact with me is because I was written by some dude. I feel like they should exist in their own world. Anyway, so I'm deviating on tangents here, so I should keep...
You must be talking about Professor Moriarty and the lounge dude.
The lounge dude, it's not... No, well, who was that one in? It wasn't in. Was it in Manhunt when Laxana Troi goes in and starts talking to the dude, and he's
Rex.
It's Rex, and he's also, yeah, you know, he's a hologram and he knows he's a hologram. And also, to a certain extent, Vic Fontaine knows he's a hologram as well. And I would...
The lounge dude.
I would prefer not that these guys knew that, because it seems really kind of like a... It causes me pain in an existential sense. It's almost as if, you know, hey, I know I'm a figment of someone's imagination. But if you were, you wouldn't wander around claiming to be so. I find it uncomfortable.
Anyway, you got that right, Pally.
Okay, to conclude, a nice catch comparing this episode's scenario to that of The Last Outpost. Had the Force been exclaiming woo-wee in every scene he's in, I might have enjoyed watching this one more. But it's going to get another 3 out of 5 from me.
Okay.
So thank you very much.
All right.
Endicore.
Yes, Endicore. The Endicore system was a star system that was the destination of the Enterprise-D when it found a shuttle pod containing a duplicate Jean-Luc Picard from 6 hours in the future, shortly before it countered an energy vortex. So they were heading for the Endicore system, okay. Which still doesn't explain why... Yeah, it still doesn't explain why Endicore chose Endicore. So Endicore, if you actually listen to the forums, there's going to be a great forum post for you. Who are you, and where'd you get Endicore from? All right. So let's end this one with Colin, who says, Kieran, the unending joys of trying to podcast with minions around. I feel for you. Laugh out loud. When I first started podcasting, I made a point of doing so when I knew the noise level would be low. But as they say, the best laid plans of mice and men. I am luckily in that when I do record anything, now I have the ability to do so without external noise from outside traffic or anything happening inside the house. But then I don't have any small people in my life. And as I read this, I'm hearing from upstairs, so that probably got on. If it helps, I was once recording Trek News and Views with a guest, and his wife came in and said, "You've been on there long enough. Say goodbye to your friends and log off." And the poor guy was mortified. So, to the episode. I love this one. It has some great character moments. We find out that Picard is one hell of a pilot, and we get some humor. Picard, didn't anyone play with ships in bottles when they were boys? And Worf says, "I did not play with toys." And Data says, "I was never a boy." Followed by O'Brien saying he did, with a wry look from Riker. That whole exchange sequence butts a big smile on my face. The excitement conveyed by Picard was brilliantly done. He was like a child in a sweet shop, drinking in all he could about the ship and its technology at the time when humanity was only dreaming of the stars. The all-powerful tricorder comes into play again. If it can't be solved by a new phaser, setting, or Wesley, have no fear. Mr. Tricorder is here. There is plenty of technobabble in this one, and I do like the way they have to work the problem, although I do agree with what Kieran says above. Crusher was doing some very odd things, but I guess she was frustrated. I mean, she may not have killed anyone in sickbay for a while. Poor girl. Oh, yeah, and there is there's Geordi the holodeck lover who falls in love with the holo projection. Makes you wonder what teenagers do in the future. Yeah. 4 out of 5 for Colin. And we didn't get anything from Ben, so I'm assuming it's a 5.
It is a 5, yeah, that's right.
It's absolutely a 5. So, okay, guys, that was Booby Trap. And so, again, thank you, and come back next week as we review The Hunted. And we will be then doing forum feedback for The Enemy. Until next week, take care and good night.
Yep, good night again.